Welcome to Recover Strong, a show that will transform your recovery from an eating disorder by helping you go from theory to practice to mastery. I'm Jessica Flint, founder of Recovery Warriors, and you are listening to our podcast channel created specifically for you in all the stages and phases of recovery. I want to celebrate you for carving out this special time to learn new skills, tools, and get the inspiration you need to recover strong. Let's get started.
I'm your host, Andrea Wells. And just like you, I understand what it's like to live with an eating disorder and be held back by body image struggles. The recovery journey is ongoing, and we're all in it together as we learn to embrace new behaviors and new thoughts day by day. Join me as I connect with eating disorder experts and thought leaders to give you the tools, resources, and strategies you need to recover strong. Today, I am joined by registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, and certified personal trainer, Sam Previtt. After years of struggling with disordered eating and body image, she now runs a weight-inclusive, health-at-every-size-informed nutrition practice called Find Food Freedom, where she and her team strive to help clients break away from the harms of the diet cycle. Sam is also a media queen. She's big on Instagram and TikTok with nearly 800,000 followers between the two platforms. And she shares informative content and reels that expose diet culture lies, shed light on the truth about health and weight, along with practical tips on how to improve your relationship to food and movement. Sam has also graced your TV screens as a trusted nutrition expert on programs like CBS Mornings, The Drew Barrymore Show, NBC News, and more. And on top of all that, she hosts two podcasts, What the Actual Fork and the Find Food Freedom Podcast. She's a total icon. I'm fangirling if it's not obvious. And I'm thrilled to have her here and discuss her work and dive deep into diet culture and its lies that could be holding you back to help you move forward into an informed and empowered recovery. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thank you so much. That was such a very warm welcome.
Talk a little bit about, I have like my list of dream guests. You're at the top, so I'm so excited to have you here today.
Oh my gosh. Stop it. Stop it. Well, I'm very, very excited to be here.
The reason why I am such a big fan, I mean, there's a lot of people out there talking about diet culture and intuitive eating, and that's amazing. And I hope there's more of them to come. I think what I especially enjoy about your content is that you deliver these messages with like such like a good balance of like conviction and passion and like matter of fact, but graceful and compassionate at the same time. Like you literally post videos where you're like making coffee and it's just like chatting with your bestie, like, hey, listen up, over coffee, we're chatting about some things you need to know about diet culture or intuitive eating or health or weight. And it's just like, I just love it. And I am really excited to get into some diet culture lies with you. I think you're a great person to talk to about this. But let's start things off with a bit more of like your personal and professional background. So can you share what your experience was like living with and recovering from disordered eating?
Ooh, where to start? So I say with my story, it's, you know, very similar to a lot of dietitians, unfortunately. I think we go into school to become a dietitian thinking that we are going to find this magic answer of how to lose weight and how to be, air quotes, healthy. And I went to college hating my body, very unhealthy relationship with food and body, but had no awareness of that, like whatsoever, and thinking that if I went to school and I became a dietitian or a personal trainer or, you know, had a minor in kinesiology, that I would find this magic answer. And fast forward all of those years, they were some of my most disordered years because I had such tight restrictions and strict restrictions around food of, you know, I would go through periods of excluding carbohydrates, you know, during the day, thinking I was being good for restricting, and then find myself out of control at night. So there were so many periods of this type of restriction binging for me. And I remember like on graduation day, walking over the stage, getting my diploma, headed off to the additional schooling to become a dietitian, being like, I hate my body. I have no idea what the magic answer is. And I'm going to go become a dietitian. And I felt such imposter syndrome, again, now knowing what it is, thinking like, I'm going to go help people. Meanwhile, I can't figure this out myself. And so I, you know, fast forward through the dietetic internship, sat for the national board, became a registered dietitian, started practicing in very weight-centric care, giving people calorie counts and meal plans. And it makes me cringe just thinking about the things that were said in session. And I felt more and more unfulfilled as the time went on. And I also started to recognize that it wasn't working. It never worked for myself. It never worked for other people. If they could overcome, like, let's say we went on a meal plan and they lost X amount of weight in X amount of time, they would call me months or years later if they could overcome that guilt and shame and say, you know, I need a reset, or I gained the weight back, or I failed. And after you hear that so many times, it raises those red flags of this isn't working. Like, the system is broke. And I was so fortunate to have a friend and colleague of mine. Her name is Haley Goodrich. She's an eating disorder dietitian and just a fabulous mentor and friend. And that's when people started posting on Instagram. This was years ago. Like, I did not have an Instagram account really related to work. And I remember her starting to post about intuitive eating. And I was like, what the heck is this thing? I started asking her questions. I read the book and it all clicked for me of, oh shit, this is the answer. The answer is that intentional weight loss is not the answer. And that just shook me to my core and started the years and years and years of unlearning and relearning and unpacking. And that still brings me to where I am today. So I was, you know, first probably exposed to intuitive eating back in, let's say, 2016-ish. And, you know, it's now 2024. So it's been years of making that shift from working as a weight-centric practitioner and transitioning. So many different ways we can go with that. But those are the first thoughts that came up for me.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting how it was like you entered the career kind of fueled by it from a disordered place, like a personal disordered place. And I think I like how you highlight, like, you learned about intuitive eating. You're like, oh, it all makes sense now why it didn't make sense. Because it's like we have the wool pulled over our eyes by so many lies from diet culture. So thank you for highlighting that. I think that's very helpful. And let's segue into the diet culture lies, because we've already touched on that here. And just to be extra super clear for the listener, because of people in different places in recovery, what exactly is a diet and what is diet culture?
Oh, that's a good one. So diet culture is this $72+ billion industry telling us that there's something wrong with our bodies and we need to shrink our bodies. Basically, that weight loss is the answer to all of our problems, all of our health conditions and whatnot. So I always say a diet is anything that has the mission for intentional weight loss, because there's so much on the internet that people are like, well, this isn't a diet. And I'm like, well, what's the goal? Is it shrinking the body? Then it sure is. So that's probably the easiest way that I define a diet, is where the mission and the goal of the plan, the program, whatever it is intentional weight loss at all costs.
And what do diets have in common with eating disorders?
I think where my head goes is, in especially just in this day and age, is how glorified disordered eating and diets are, right? Like, they, people that struggle with disordered eating think that they are being healthy and they are pursuing this healthism and this elitism, and that shrinking your body is the absolute best possible thing that you can do, not only from a health perspective, but from a morality perspective. And that's where, when I think of eating disorders, you know, thinking about that as well. For some, it can be related to body image, like driven of being smaller means I'll be loved, I'll be accepted, I'll be worthy. But then also that control factor, right? So like when we're in diet culture, when we're a disordered eater, life gets crazy. I mean, let's face it, our world is a freaking shit show right now. So when this is all crazy out here, we say, oh, well, what can I control? And it's my food, right? My calories, my macros, my portions, whatever it is, serves as that false sense of control. And I see a lot of that, you know, not only with dieters, but also with eating disorder, is it gives you that false sense of control. But the caveat is the more we try to control our food and body, the more out of control we feel around food and in our body. So it's an absolute mind fuck. And I apologize. I forgot to ask you if I'm allowed to swear.
Oh, swear your brains out. It's okay, all good. Perfect. Yeah. No, thank you for highlighting that. I think the line is super blurred between diet and eating disorder, and it is a spectrum. So I think it's helpful to understand that diets aren't so different from an eating disorder. And I think some people can think that they are, but they have a lot in common.
I'm glad you said that, because I feel like there's so much gray area there. And the more and more and more I've supported clients, and we have a team of 10 plus dietitians and the thousands of people we support, so many people think they're not sick, or again, doing these things makes them healthy, when, you know, it's really leading them to a path of extreme disordered eating or eating disorder. And not saying that every single person that diets is going to have an eating disorder, but we know it's one of the number one predictors to get us there. And it's definitely a gateway for sure.
Yeah. And like you're saying, so many people just don't realize, because diet culture is so normalized and praised. I had a friend today text me because she's been listening to some episodes that we're doing here. And she's like, I've been listening to you and I think I might be struggling with disordered eating. And I've been friends with this woman for like 15 years and she's just realizing this. So it really goes to show the wool being pulled over our eyes. And let's go over some, like, what are some specific lies that diet culture tells and which one really pisses you off?
Oh gosh, there's so many. Where to start? I would say probably the number one, if we go back to what a diet is, right? And how we defined it, I think the biggest lie is that you have to shrink your body to be healthy, or shrink your body to be happy. Our worth is not defined by our weight. Our health is absolutely not defined by one data point. There's so much nuance to this conversation. And, you know, as we go down this combo, if you will, I do want to take a moment to just acknowledge my privileges. I am a thin, white, cis, hetero, able-bodied woman. And so I think as we enter these conversations, or, you know, with the experience that I have of having these conversations online, I'll often get so much pushback. You know, it's easy for you to say because you reside in a smaller body. And 100%, I want to agree with that. My privileges make it easy for me to say these things online versus the colleagues that I work with that reside in all size bodies or marginalized bodies can say the same message as me and get so much hate and discrimination against them simply for existing in their body and saying the same things. So if we go back to this myth or this lie, right, that weight equals health, I think it's really important to recognize that if that were the case, then every single human that was in a smaller or straight-sized body wouldn't have any medical diseases or conditions. And every single human that resides in a larger body would hit X weight, whatever that weight is, right, or that size is, and they would have all of the lab values out of normal range, or they would have every disease or condition. And so it's just so important to recognize that. And going back to the myth, we kind of had a twofold here of like health versus happiness. I do not guilt or shame anybody who wants to reside in a smaller body because of the fatphobic world that we live in, and how when someone is in a smaller body, they are treated with more respect, right? They, for just simply existing versus someone in a larger body. So we know that this world is fatphobic, but we also know that we can shrink our bodies for years and years and years. We can try to shrink our bodies. We can lose weight. And oftentimes when I work with clients and they've had those, you know, moments of getting in that smaller body or a smaller body. And I'll ask them, did you love yourself then? Right? Were you happy? And they're always like, no, it was never good enough. Right? Look back at that picture and think, oh my gosh, how could I have not been happy? But I can remember the whole time saying I hated my arms or I wish I lost X more pounds. And it's, you know, we cannot hate our way to happiness. We don't just hate our bodies so much and then they magically shrink and we're like, oh, this is great. I love myself. So I think lies I see are that a smaller body will automatically bring you health or automatically bring you happiness. And that is just so far from the truth.
And I think it's important to highlight that there really are those two things coming into play. Like, it's health and happiness. Cause I remember I'm in recovery myself and I remember, okay, I was at a point where like, okay, so I don't need to be skinny or try to be skinny for my worth. I believe that, you know, I'm worthy at any size, but what about health? Like, I need to still try to be skinny for health, right? So there's the two different aspects there. And can we dive a little bit more into weight and health and like what we know about how it correlates?
Absolutely. Because I would totally agree with you. I think that's a natural progression of coming to this work and recognizing that our worth is not in our weight. And again, people saying, okay, but what about my health? Because when we look at how much weight stigma is integrated into our healthcare system too, it's all around us, right? If we go to the doctors, if we go any healthcare professional, chances are we're going to have weight stigma or we're going to experience weight stigma depending on the size of our body. So when we look at health, I really encourage people to take a broad perspective and kind of step back a little and first to define, like, what does health mean to you? And this is something I love to do with clients on like day one of their intuitive eating journey. And then, you know, years down the road and see how those definitions of health are just so vastly different. So I like to keep it pretty simple and think of health as feeling physically, mentally, and emotionally pleasant in our bodies. And of course, if there are medical diseases or conditions that we have, tending to those in ways that are going to make us feel more pleasant. So when we work with any clients that have genuine goals of improving their health, it's important to know, how do they define health? Because everybody defines it differently. And to also, I want to put a disclaimer that health is not a moral obligation. And what I mean by that is I have so many people that come to us that think, I have to do this. I have to do that. I should be doing this. I should be doing that. And to that, I say, why? First of all, where's the intrinsic motivator? Because if it's not coming from you wanting to make those changes or wanting to make change, then chances are we're going to have a lot of resentment towards it. It's not going to stick. And there's just a lot to unpack there. So going back to health, I like to reference the determinants of health out of the World Health Organization. I can share a link with you too that you could put in the show notes where it really breaks down all of the things that impact our health. It is so much more than what we eat and how we move our bodies, which is what diet culture tells us. So it looks at our individual behaviors, our social circumstances, our genetics and biology, our medical care, our environment, and all of these things together encompass somebody's health. And so it's important to, like I said from the beginning, take that broad step back and assess all of these pieces of the pie, if you will, and look at, you know, what can we, I don't want to even say enhance, but where do we need support? And when it comes to individual behaviors, that's what everyone thinks about, right? That is the variety of food we consume, our water, our stress management, our sleep, our movement and or rest. Like, all of those things that I just named are individual behaviors that we can work on, we can implement, we can strive for, all uncoupled from intentionally shrinking our body. So that's where our world gets a little messy with diet culture, is diet culture will say you need to eat to lose weight, right? You need to move to lose weight. All of these behaviors come with this caveat of intentional weight loss. But in the intuitive eating paradigm, when we're genuinely working on improving our health, we're saying, hey, we can work on all of these things uncoupled from intentionally shrinking the body. And that kind of pulls in, maybe it's not a diet culture lie, but it's like a, we could flip this to an intuitive eating myth. Is I see oftentimes people will say, intuitive eating means you don't care about your health, right? And like, you're just giving up and all these things, but it's the opposite of that. It's releasing the intentional weight loss as the mission of your life so you can genuinely improve your health. There's so much nuance to this conversation, of course, because everybody's health is different. Everyone's circumstances are different. But that's what came up for me when you asked that question.
Thank you. And the list you're describing of like the different factors that go into health, like how many of those do people actually have control over and how many of them do they not, would you say?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, truly, so when we look at the determinants of health, our individual behaviors do make up about 36% of our health, they estimate. And then the rest of it, right? I'm not good at math. What's 100 minus 36 is pretty uncontrollable. So when we look at that, because if you think about it, your physical environment, now when you're younger, right, you don't get to choose your physical environment. Like you are born into a physical environment. And of course, as you age and become an adult, you have more control over that. But again, there's still, we bring privilege into the conversation. Think about medical care and access to medical care. Again, privilege comes up in all of these conversations. Genetics and biology. Zero control over that, right? And that's where weight falls. If we look deeper into the research, our genetics and biology encompasses our height, our weight. I would never look at someone and say, hey, I really need you to shed 3 inches off your height. Can you do that? Or can you imagine if someone came to me and said, I really want to lose 3 inches off my height? And so that's looking at it that same way is like, our weight is a predetermined blueprint from our genetics and biology, but somehow diet culture has twisted the individual behaviors category to fully control something that is not controllable. And so, yeah, it's twisted. Like the more people learn, especially in session, it's really cool to see the breakthroughs with clients when they start to learn about the determinants of health and think about health differently and realize like we have very, very little control over it.
So how do you help clients discern between the twisted messages from diet culture, the lies about health, and what actually is helpful to their recovery with food or health in general? Like, how do you know the difference between the two?
That is such a good question, especially because if we go on social media, there is so much crap out there, yeah. If you will. Well, the first thing I think we could bring it back to what is the intention behind the information that is given, right? Because if someone is saying you need to eat X, Y, and Z, and that'll help you lose weight, right? Then we can just rule it out. Like if intentional weight loss is anywhere in the conversation, rule it out. Because we don't need to intentionally lose weight to improve our health. Now, I also think it comes, you know, when we especially think about people online and then just intuitive eating paradigm and how I've really unpacked and unlearned a lot, I think it comes back to finding trusted professionals that are working alongside you, not barking authoritative messages at you. So if we think about, you know, how much nuance there is to this conversation and how individualized everybody is as a human and how different they are in their circumstances, there are very little blanket statements that work for everyone. So piece of advice would be check the credentials on who you are receiving care from. I wish I could say, just look for a registered dietitian, but that is not what I'm going to tell you to do because as someone who used to be a very diet culture-y dietitian, there is a lot of them out there. And that goes for every profession, right? Is there's a lot of people rooted in weight stigma. And then there's a lot of people that are making this transition. So find safe providers, find people that are certified in intuitive eating, find people that are eating disorder informed, find people that understand that eating disorders are the second leading cause of death and mental illness, and it is not something that should be taken lightly or brushed over. And when it comes to the way that somebody makes you feel when they give you information. So going back to, as a diet culture dietitian, I was trained to be the air quotes expert and to tell people what to eat and to tell people what to do and to, like, didn't matter who they were, I was just telling them what to do, no matter what they looked like, no matter who they were. Now, when I work with clients in session or I think about our team, our clients are the expert of their body. We have no idea what it's like to live in their body. And we are there to hold space for them and to listen to them and to support them. And everybody is going to need different advice, right? Or different support depending on so many different circumstances. So I think that's something I would also invite people to be cautious of whoever you're seeking health, whatever that means to you, health advice from. How do they make you feel? How do they deliver that information? Are they on your team or are they pretty much barking at you that you should follow them and do this? And if you've never met this person and never talked to them and they're just a video of them, you know, talking to millions of people that they don't know, telling you all to do the same thing, chances are it's bullshit.
You know who I'm thinking of when you say that? Have you heard of Bobby Parrish?
I already knew. I didn't even need to. I was going to say it, but then I was like, you know what? I even hate saying his name because I'm just like, I don't even want to give you clout because it's terrible. It's really, really harmful.
Well, when you talk about credentials, like, he's just a guy on the internet. His credentials, digital creator, and people are out there like, you're talking about how does this make you feel? If you read people in those comments, they're freaked out. They're like, well, do I do this? Do I do that? There's Bobby approved food. Like, he's not a professional. And there's many out there like him.
That's the sad thing of our current state of social media, right? Is like, that's the stuff that goes viral. That's the stuff that performs because it's so polarizing and his comment sections are full of fighting or fear mongering. And it's so disheartening, but that's exactly who I'm speaking about when I say those kind of things. And like you said, we could come up with 100 more accounts just like him. I saw, like, I forget her name, but there's a new one in town that it's like, she's a crunchy mom and she does the exact same thing as Bobby, but her whole shtick is being a crunchy mom and she doesn't allow X, Y, and Z ingredients in the house. And it's just really hard because you see these videos and you think about all the moms who are already struggling with so much depression and anxiety and relationship with food and body. And then to add this on top of it, it's really, really scary. So,
yeah.
But that's why we're here, right?
Exactly. Trying to challenge the narrative.
Yep.
It feels like an uphill battle sometimes, but we're doing it. Let's get a bit more into the $70+ billion industry that fuels so much of these lies and fear mongering, which is the diet industry. And what was the number you mentioned earlier in the episode of how much it's worth? 70?
That was $72 billion. And honestly, that was years ago. And I remember hearing Evelyn Tribbley speak, saying it was like over hundreds of billions if you work in healthcare, because we know how much healthcare is like steeped in diet culture. So it's a lot of money. Let's just say that.
Mm. Yeah, at least 70 billion, if not over 100. That says a lot about the impact it has in our world. And we know, like, the studies show that diets don't work long term. It's not sustainable. How do you see the diet industry or popular diet programs utilizing this fact?
Well, my head goes to a few companies in particular that...
You can name and shame, by the way.
Perfect.
If you want.
I mean, yeah, you've okay. Seen my account. You know I name and shame all over them. And we'll put a disclaimer on this that we are shaming the companies, not the humans who participate in these diets, because been there, done that, right? Like, chances are, if you're listening to this, you have a dieting past and you have followed diets before. And so it's the companies that are preying on our insecurities as consumers. But so big ones I think of probably would be, one would be Noom. You know, when they first launched, they pushed hard with the anti-diet language. This was before they also brought on like the weight loss drug aspect to their company. But I remember when they first launched, like you would look up anti-diet and boom, Noom was the first thing in Google. You would search intuitive eating on Google. Boom, Noom was the first thing. Like they paid shit ton of money to be that searchable, right? And to come up. So other, you know, diet companies know that, like you said, people are getting smarter. Consumers are getting smarter. They don't want to diet. They don't want to be on a diet. And so these companies are co-opting the intuitive eating language and this anti-diet language to basically trick consumers. And, you know, Weight Watchers is another one. I mean, Weight Watchers has been around forever, but we've seen their ebbs and flows of how they change their messaging and thinking about, you know, free foods where you can eat all of these foods and they don't count, or like, I don't even know what they do anymore. But so that is something that I see. It's like the messaging that they pull in. And I think also, you know, we're entering a very, I don't know if scary is the right word, time with just the weight loss drugs on the market now and how that's shifting things where people are saying, well, it's not a diet. I'm not on a diet. I'm on a medically prescribed drug from a physician that I need to, air quotes, treat my Osler, air quotes, obesity, which I don't use in practice. And so now that's a whole nother mind fuck of unpacking that, because people are like, well, I'm not on a diet. I'm on a drug that my doctor prescribed me because they said that I needed this to treat a disease, which in my head, I'm like, but it's not a disease that doesn't need a drug, you know, like, so it's, we're just entering a really, really scary time. And it's, again, I do not guilt or shame people for wanting to lose weight, for wanting to take weight loss drugs. I understand, because we live in a very, very cruel world. And I also have had the honor of supporting thousands of people to see the harms of diets and now these weight loss drugs, right? People coming off of these drugs and coming to work with us and get support. And it's really, really difficult. So just, yeah, that's where my head goes.
Yeah. I mean, the weight loss drugs and injections have thrown a wrench in what's already been a big, crazy, messy wheel. And I want to plug Sam's, you did like a talk with Dr. Asher, known as the Fat Doctor on Instagram.
Yes. I was just about to say that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I listened to that a few weeks ago. I'm like, that was amazing. Dr. Asher had so many great things to say. It inspired me to do an episode as well on Ozempic. We had a registered dietitian come in and had a great talk about that as well. So I'll plug both of those. There's a lot to learn there, and there's so much to get into with how it's a mind fuck, like you're saying.
Yes, I'm happy to provide that link for your show notes, because same thing, like we've covered so much on like how we felt about Ozempic, but we wanted to bring Dr. Asher Larmi in to really give like a physician side of it and what they're seeing. And they break down the research so beautifully and so well. So happy to help with that.
Yeah, absolutely. The more we can know about it, the better. And like, do you think that diet companies like Noom or Weight Watchers are counting on the fact that these diets don't work, like for their bottom line?
You know, I wish I could talk to someone there and ask them that. Probably yes. I would say yes, because if they look at the research, they can figure it out themselves that they don't work. And we know that there are zero randomized controlled trials that show sustained weight loss greater than 2 years for any diet that exists ever. So that looks pretty good for them, because they're like, well, if I can get these people hooked. And I think, you know, when we look at how fat phobic and how, like, how much weight stigma exists in the world, if that exists, their programs aren't going anywhere. And so I think it's like, for them, they're gonna unfortunately be around for a really, really long time. Like, and so I don't know if they necessarily count on the research, but I'm sure if they're smart enough to make this many billions, they've probably looked into it to say, hey, we're good. People are going to keep coming back.
Yeah. What do you think of the ethics of the diet industry? And like, what are some concerning practices that you've seen or impacts that they have?
Such good questions. I've never even been asked before. I mean, their ethics are bullshit, right? Like, I don't even think they have ethics necessarily. But I also think it comes back to thinking about, okay, who runs these companies, right? Who's seated at the table? And what are their beliefs about bodies, about health, about food? And if they are disordered, right? If they are fat phobic, if they are all of these things, then they're going to put out these apps or these programs or these plans or whatever it is, right? That showcase that. And so, because you have to think about myself as the example in this, right? Is that I shared how I was a diet culture dietitian and I've transitioned. And once I learned more, once you know you learn more, you can shift and you can change and you can say, wow, I caused harm, and wow, you know, this wasn't the way, and I want to continue to learn and grow and be curious. Well, you know, I think some of these people understand that they're causing harm, but when you're making billions of dollars and so much is riding on it, then it's like, well, whatever, it's not harming me. And so I think there's probably some people wrapped up in these companies that understand the harm they're causing and continue to do it anyways. And then unfortunately, I think there's people who just, they have fat phobic belief systems. They are entrenched in diet culture. They believe that thinner bodies are better, and they truly believe that and think that they are helping people by trying to make people smaller. And so there's like two camps there. And that's where I really encourage people and try so hard to plant seeds with people of how you talk about bodies, right? Like how does that affect other people? And you know, we could go on a whole nother tangent there. So, but unfortunately, I think there's very little ethics in the diet culture world. And hopefully, I always say we do this work, so like one day we won't have to do it anymore. But I think, unfortunately, you and I will be dead and gone a lot. Like, and diet culture is still going to be around. We do this work now. So people think we're crazy and radical right now when it's like, all we're saying is all bodies deserve respect. How fucking radical. But I think it's important work to do to hopefully one day that these companies won't exist.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And like I said earlier, it can feel like an uphill battle, but we've come a long way too. God, we have a lot more to go. And when you mentioned, you're like, I don't even know what Weight Watchers or Noom are saying these days, I'm going to share you some things that I got from their website a couple days ago.
Oh, please do.
This is from like last Thursday or Friday. So Weight Watchers has ads going around that says, no foods are off limits. All foods fit. Noom's website says, we don't tell you what you can or can't eat because we don't believe in, quote, good or, quote, bad foods. So that's like sneaky. They're totally co-opting anti-diet stuff.
And that's not true. That's what, right? Because like Weight Watchers, sure, all foods fit. But if I go over my point range, then it doesn't fit.
Right? Exactly.
And almonds, yeah, like almonds don't fit. Or with Noom being like, we don't believe in good and bad foods. You have a stoplight approach to food that says red is like the not so good, right? Or don't eat a lot of. So absolute bullshit.
Are there like any other similar messages you've heard out there that are kind of sneaky like that, that people should look out for?
Well, you know, what's funny is I as much as I do show up online, I am so removed from social for my mental health. It's come a long way. And I almost forget, like hearing you say those things, I'm like, they still are saying that? Because it can be so disheartening, and it can feel like you said, this uphill battle. It can feel like you're screaming and no one's listening. And so you know, my social media feeds are so curated with people like yourself and, you know, colleagues that are doing this work, that I don't necessarily see the diet stuff unless I really search for it. Like if I'm like, oh, I want to do a piece of content on, you know, Noom or whatever, and I look it up. But for some reason with the new year, the one that I was seeing, and I think it was because it was more like some of these fringe influencers that I followed, maybe like in, you know, home decor or lifestyle or whatever, they kind of brought in, I kept seeing 75 hard everywhere. And I was like, absolutely not. Like, please stop. I don't know if you know what 75 hard is.
I've heard of it. I forget the details. Please remind me.
So long story short, 75 days, you have to work out twice a day for 45 minutes each every day. You have to drink, it's either a gallon or more of water every single day. You have to take a photo of yourself every single day, like a mirror type shot. You have to, it's like 10 minutes of reading every day. Okay, great. There's like one positive thing maybe. And then like for diet, they just say like you have to follow. It's interesting. They don't have like diet guidelines. It's like you have to follow a strict diet and stick with it. So like it's very loose there. And then if you break any of those things, then you have to start over, like day one restart. So if you're on like day 34 and you only get one workout in, now you're back to day one the next day. And yeah.
That's horrific.
Yeah, it's terrible. And I was seeing it everywhere. And people are like, well, it helps you move more. I never said I was against movement, right? Like, but I prefer that the people in my circle that I am supporting are moving their bodies because they want to, right? And in joyful ways, whatever that is. Maybe it is a CrossFit class. Maybe it is gardening. Maybe it is a walk. Maybe it's, you know, whatever it is. But not because you feel like you have to do two workouts a day, every single day, you know, et cetera. So that was one that was like, it's a challenge. If you Google it, it's so funny. It has like some shit landing page, looks like a fake website, which is wild that it has gotten so big. But he calls it like I forget what he calls it, like a mental health something. And I'm like, can we stop? Can we just stop with all of the bullshit? So that was a big one I've seen. But I really, really encourage clients to put their blinders on and to stop, you know, I say that, but then also it is important to be in the space and to be fighting the bullshit. So finding that balance for me where I'm not getting burnt out, but also, you know, speaking to some of this.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's such a reminder that things are constantly changing. You really have to be on your toes because like 75 hard is new. There's going to be more new things to come that are like, that's just terrible thing that they're presenting. That is so disordered. And thank you for bringing up movement as well. Sam is a great person to talk to about movement. She's also a certified personal trainer and she's going to be on the show again in another episode. And we're going to dive more into movement. So stay tuned for that. But for now, let's wrap up this episode with some advice for the listener. I know that you have shared in your work in the past that you once said you were like kind of one leg in, one leg out when it came to rejecting diet culture for a period of time, which I think is normal. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to someone who is in that place? Like they're struggling to let go of the notion that losing weight is the answer to a better or a healthier life.
Yeah. Well, I think just first of all, giving themselves credit for being on the fence in the first place. Because it's really easy to not even get on the fence and put that one foot over. And I just encourage you to keep going and keep being curious, keep learning, keep growing, keep reading, keep looking into, again, speaking from like an intuitive eating perspective, keep learning about the intuitive eating message, keep learning about health at every size, keep learning about weight inclusive care and what it actually means, because there's a lot of misinformation from people spreading things that it's just simply not. And also know that, you know, when it comes to weight, we're not saying that we shame people that lose weight, right? We're not saying that, you know, your body is terrible if it shrinks. We are just not focused on intentional weight loss as the sole progress and, you know, outcome that we're striving for. Bodies are meant to ebb and flow and change, and they will continue to do so our entire life. So that is something I would also add as a caveat, but to wrap it with a bow is stay curious. Stay curious.
That's perfect. Because it really is and unlearning over time. And it's staying curious, taking it in.
I'm still unlearning every day.
Same. Yeah. It's ongoing. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your advice and for sharing that today. Before we go, can you let all the listeners know how they can stay in touch with you?
Yeah, the easiest way would probably be to head over to our Instagram account. So you can give us a follow at find.food.freedom. And I'm excited to share that we are now accepting health insurance, which has been a long time coming. So we have an amazing team of 10 plus registered dietitians, certified intuitive eating counselors. And if you come on over to our Instagram at find.food.freedom, you can get your benefits checked and see if you can match with a provider and get this care for free or a very, very, very low cost.
That's amazing. Hooray for more accessible eating disorder help and support. That's incredible.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Sam. I so appreciate it. This is my big fangirl moment. Thank you for coming on, and I'm excited to see you in our next episode.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, my warrior friend, thank you for having the discipline to listen in. If you found this episode helpful and know somebody in recovery who could benefit from its inspiring message, please share this show with them. It would mean the world to us at Recovery Warriors if we can get our cause out to more people struggling with an eating disorder. So if what you heard today was helpful, share the show with another warrior or anyone on your treatment team. You can do this directly from your podcast player or send them over to recoverywarriors.com. We have a goldmine of free resources there for all stages of recovery. And until the next episode, may compassion light the path you are on and courage keep you on it. You totally got this, warrior.